I would like to now introduce our guest speaker for this evening, Mr. Johnny Harris from Long Beach.
You can leave that up here. It's from both. I might want to throw something to it. My name's Johnny, and I'm an alcoholic. I'm glad to be here tonight. I'm glad to be sober. Thank Angela for inviting me down, extending the privilege of me participating at an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting. It's my opinion, and I hope it always remains that it's some type of a privilege to be allowed to come and sit in these rooms. I have never been able to get it through my sick head that I have a right to everything that goes on in Alcoholics Anonymous just because I was lucky enough to stumble in here and get sober and stay that way. And the reason I tell you that is because everything that's good and decent in my life is the byproduct I discovered, the God I discovered sitting in meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous. I am extremely pleased to be here tonight, fully clothed and in my right mind. And I only tell you that because it seems like to me, the longer I stay sober, the more necessary it becomes for me to remember from whence I came. And I don't ever want to forget that a little over half a century ago, I came to in a cell in solitary confinement at a maximum security penitentiary, drifting in and out of total insanity. And because of loving God as He expressed Himself through our program called Alcoholics Anonymous, it's no longer necessary for me to crawl around on my hands and knees like an animal. If I don't get nothing else out of this deal tonight, I guess I could live with that all the way home. Makes me feel good. And I'd also like to stand here and tell you that that's where alcohol took me to. I like to go along with that theme, but you see, that's not true. That's where I took me to. The only thing that alcohol ever did in my life, it kept me alive long enough to get to Alcoholics Anonymous. See, I'm sure if I'm standing here, if I hadn't taken a drink of alcohol, I'd have probably blown my brains out before I was 9 years old. I know I don't know whether it's really true, but it seems like to me that it was far back as I can remember, possibly from the first time I ever thought about it. I was born needing some type of an answer. But see, I don't know what's wrong with me, so I don't know where to go to look for that answer. It's kind of hard to seek the answer to a problem if you don't know what your problem is. Now, I don't know what's wrong with me. I'm restless, and I'm irritable, and I'm discontented. I don't understand then, as I've come to understand through this book, that those are the symptoms of the most deadly illness that's ever been known to mankind. My sponsor tells me that there's written history about the illness of alcoholism that stretches back over 4,000 years. And the greatest thing about that is, up until 70-some years ago, there was never a permanent answer for this illness of ours. And I want to go on record right now and let you know that nowhere in this book does it describe my illness as a disease. That is something that the American Medical Association came up with in the 70s so they could treat it. My book tells me, and it's the same book that I got my hand on right now that came off that desk over there, that I have an illness of a spiritual nature. Our co-founder wrote, called it a malady of a spiritual nature. If I didn't have a spiritual illness, why would I need a spiritual awakening to recover from it? Why would I need a set of spiritual principles to recover from this seemingly hopeless state of mind and body? If I just had a disease, couldn't I just go to the doctor and get a pill? A lot of people do. They think that's recovery from alcoholism. But it's really not true. There isn't any way medically you can treat what's wrong with me. Nothing. It has to be treated from within. Now, I know a lot about drinking because everybody in my family drank. But I'm not one of these type of people who look back on my childhood as scarring, because even back then I was so consumed with myself that I didn't have the ability to look out and see what was going on around me. And if I had, if everybody else was doing it, what I'm looking for is a way out of this dilemma that I'm in. I don't understand what it is. So I see my grandmother. My grandmother lived when she was 90 years old, and she never took a drink of alcohol or smoked a cigarette in her life. Now, my grandmother wouldn't think it's a big deal that I've been sober over 52 and a half years. Big deal, she'd say. I ain't had a drink for 90. I used to look at her and say, you ought to have a couple, Granny, make you feel better from time to time. But my grandmother was one of these type of people who got everything she needed out of the church she went to. I used to watch her as a child because everybody in my family was busy. And I used to watch her. I spent a lot of time with her on Sunday morning. They'd use her house for a war zone the night before, these crazy people. You know, they were, I guess the psychiatrists would call them dysfunctional. They were just run of the neighborhood type of people where I lived, I guess. You know, they were bootleggers and whores and gamblers and convicts and just a real kind of an average sort of family in this little town we lived in. And I didn't know, you know, I didn't pay much attention to that. My grandmother took care of them. I mean, she went to church and she'd be gone for a couple hours. She came back. I didn't know where she went. She was different when she got back. She was a little lighter in her step, kind of danced around them and cleaned them up and sang songs to Jesus. Now, I took a look at that and I figured that all I'm going to have to do is go where my grandmother goes and do what my grandmother does. I'd be like my grandmother. But you see, I'm not like my grandmother. My grandmother's not alcoholic. You couldn't pour enough whiskey into my grandmother to make an alcoholic. Not at all. If you'd get her drunk, she'd probably wake up the next morning and quit. I'd never do that again. But I don't know what's going on. So I went to sit in church with my grandmother as a child. Because I wanted out of this dilemma that I was in. Even then, I knew there was something wrong with me that I needed an answer for this dilemma. I didn't know what it was. So I'm looking for it, and I'm sitting in church, and nothing's happening. My grandmother said to me that it happened to me when I went down front. I went down front. Nothing happened down there either. And it took me a long time to realize there was nothing wrong with my grandmother's church, but there's just something wrong with the jackass sitting in it. Me. See, what I'm looking for, I don't even understand. See, I don't understand this when it's going on. That's the dilemma of this illness that I have. I don't understand it until I'm past it, until I have some type of an answer for it. I don't have any answer for this. I'm sitting there in this church looking for something way out there to make me feel better in here. I'm always looking for something to make me feel better in here, which only goes to prove to me the problem has always been there. And what happened to me is one day I sit on the back porch of my grandfather's house with my grandfather while I'm watching him drink whiskey out of a fruit jar. He put it down, and he got up and he went somewhere, and I picked it up and took a drink of it. That's all I did. And I guess, according to this book, that the next couple of minutes of my life is what makes me an alcoholic. See, I'm not an alcoholic because I spent the next 20 years of my life creating mayhem out in the world. I'm an alcoholic because I have some type of an abnormal reaction to alcohol. And what I damn near died learning here is that everybody who drinks it doesn't get the same reaction from it that I do. I don't understand that, but that's the way it works. Because it wasn't a bad feeling. It was a good feeling. I can remember it like it was yesterday. It went inside of me and kind of calmed the madness that was going on inside of me. It took me from the black pit of nothingness, stood me into the gray fringes of the business of living, and installed in me an arrogance that said, damn you, world, it's all right. I'm not good enough to be around the good people, but I'm too good to be around the bad people. It's okay right here. But see, I'm not ready for what happens to me next. Because it happens maybe only to 1 out of 10 people who drink alcohol. It probably is the only thing that separates me from the rest of the people in the world. I don't have any special type of alcoholic emotions. Oh, blah, blah, blah. You hear this stuff from these facilities from some place that somebody's crammed all that crap into their head. What separates me from everybody else in the world is that once I put alcohol into my system, I am powerless not to take the next drink. The doctor in this book writes about it. He calls it a phenomenon of craving. And if it's in this book, it's true. And if it isn't in this book, it's some type of psychobabble that's coming from someplace else or somebody else's opinion about something. because this is the only program of recovery in 4,000 years of recorded history that you can apply these principles to your life and your life will get better. Now, I don't know that, because what happened to me every time I drank for the next 20 years of my life. 3 days later, after my first drink, I was pulled out from underneath the bridge and stood in front of a judge and sentenced to the Hutchinson State Reform School. 20 years later, I took a drink of alcohol in Compton, and they pulled me out of a car and sent me to 20 years in the penitentiary. Now, that's what happened to me when I drank. I got drunk and went places. I had to travel around. I went from reform school to reform school to junior penitentiaries to penitentiaries to nut houses. Now they call them treatment centers. I'm a little more partial to nut house, if you want to know the truth. It's a little more macho. I know a couple of you want to be macho. I can recognize your uniforms. I've always figured if you're going to be bad, you ought to be bad. I don't think you ought to quit drinking because you puke a little. Hang in there. I think you ought to give it everything you got. I really do. I think Alcoholics Anonymous works a hell of a lot better when you run out of options. I gave it everything I had out there. I threw everything into the battle and lost the battle. And I didn't even know what I was fighting. I didn't have a clue what was wrong with me. 20 years after my first drink, I ended up crawling around in that cell in solitary confinement at maximum security penitentiary. And what's significant about that to me tonight is because a friend of mine come by and picked me up, and we drove down there and had coffee and talked and giggled and laughed and do what we do when we're together. That day when I came through, there wasn't a single solitary soul left upon the face of this earth that would send me a penny postcard. They were all gone. But you know what? They should be gone. I don't have any right to have anything good and decent in my life just because I got sober and stayed here. Everything that's good and decent in my life is a byproduct of this God I discovered sitting with you. I don't know any. I haven't seen anything else or any big thing that happened to it. But that's what's stumbling into your meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous. The fourth day of November, 1959, I came to my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I didn't come here to get sober. I was as physically sober when I came to my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous as I am right now. It's physically sober. And I didn't understand what was going on. The reason I came to my first meeting because the institution I was in let women come in there. I came to my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous almost 53 years ago to smell perfume. And I've been honking and sniffing around here ever since. Why you come is totally immaterial if you're alcoholic. No alcoholic comes here with good intentions. If you come here with good intentions, you don't belong here. There might be an Al-Anon meeting down the street somewhere. They have great intentions. But I came here, and I moved in and sit in the back row where people like me sit. I'm not going to move up front. Somebody might think I'm a member of AA, for Christ's sake, or whatever. I don't know what it is. Here I am. I'm sitting here. I'm sat down by this clown. I got my coat collar up and my shades on because I'm cool. If I'd have been any cooler when I got here, I'd have probably froze to death, for God's sake. But there I sit, for all intents and purposes, staring at two big A's on the backboard. And I thought to myself, what is this, some type of an anti-aircraft brigade? What is this? I don't know. And I asked this guy sitting next to me, what is it? He said, it's Alcoholics Anonymous. Well, I sunk down in my seat. Anybody see the big gangster hanging out with them winos? Do you understand? I got a big-time gangster image I'm trying to portray. I've been damn near dying from it, but I'm going to portray it. I dressed like it. I looked like it. I didn't have to tell you about it. I just bounced around, bobbing like a little doll on the back of a car or something. The only difference was I didn't have a hat to put on backwards. But I guess that's the only difference. But I don't know what this thing is. I tell you what's frightening to me. Here I am sitting in a room, and I'm staring at an answer that I had sold my soul for. But I don't recognize the answer because I don't know what my problems are. I have a clue what's wrong with me. All I know is, as I look back on it now, is that I was in an absolute perfect state when I got here. I was a thing called hopeless when I got here. And hopeless, if you don't know what it is there's no way out of this dilemma. None. I'm living in hell, and it's going to be hell from now to eternity. I don't sleep at night without some type of high-powered sedatives in my system. I don't understand what's going on. I'm waking up at 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning in these nightmares and these cold sweats. I'm sitting there staring at things. I see it sitting handcuffed between two detectives while they bury my 17-year-old brother. And my mother sitting across the gravesite staring at me with all the hate that one human being could possibly ever have because I was responsible for the death of my 17-year-old brother. And I don't know what's going on here. But that's the way I was living when I got here. Without some type of help, I didn't sleep. I woke up, thousands and countless nameless faces of people I had destroyed on my selfish, self-centered walk through life. That's what come to your first meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous. That thing who crawled out from that cell in solitary confinement was transferred down to this place. And I don't know what's going on sitting in these meetings, so I do what people like me do. I sit in the back row and I make fun of these people. Here these people get up on Sunday morning, they drove 100 miles up those old back roads. There was no money in the treatment of alcoholism in those days, so everybody had to buy their own gasoline and afford their own thing. And they drove 100 miles up those old back roads. They spent 2 hours talking to a room full of people who didn't want to listen to them. People like me who sat in the back row and made fun of them. Now let me tell you how very sick that is. Here I am sitting in the penitentiary. I don't know when I'm going home. And I'm making fun of people who are leaving in an hour. There's something wrong with that. But that's the way it is. That's the way it is when you're blocked into this selfishness and self-centeredness. You cannot stare at yourself because you're going to see what a phony you are. You're going to see what a piece of crap that you really are. And you can't get away from it. See, I'm not one of these people who hide behind masquerades of blackouts. I never had one. I was wide awake for everything that I ever did in my life. Until I went insane in a courtroom and blacked out and ended up in solitary. That's my dilemma in life. I'm faced with everything I'd ever done from the time I was a kid until I come to Alcoholics Anonymous. And I don't understand what's going on. Sitting in these rooms, it don't look like an answer to me. But I saw something that really puzzled me. I couldn't understand what you did, why you would do anything like that. And the reason I couldn't understand it, because I'm sitting in a room and I'm looking at a bunch of givers. And I'm a taker. Takers do not understand givers because they don't hang out with them. They only hang out with takers. That's why they're all losers. They just all take to each other. They have to keep moving from group of takers to group of takers to group of takers. And finally, they end up by themselves. And if you're alcoholic, that's when death seemed like a good idea. Seemed like a great idea. And I've been there. I've been here the last time I was out. They tied me down to the bed in the old Los Angeles County Jail where I'd had 2 years doing whatever I wanted to do to me, whenever I wanted to do it, with as much money as I needed to do it with. And that's the way I do. I'm bright and yellow like Michelle's blouse there. Doctors standing there tell me I'm going to die. It don't seem like a bad idea to me that I'm going to die. Because I don't want to go on. I just can't. It's hard for me to keep the images up anymore. It's hard for me to masquerade the fear. It's hard for me to masquerade it with my violence anymore. Because I'm developing things I can't understand. I'm going against everything that I'd ever dreamed about. And I don't understand. I've been doing it for a long time. I got indoctrinated in gang and juvenile hall. And I lived in it for all those many years. You got to do a lot of things in those type of situations that you don't do normally. No matter what your situation is. I lay in a bed for a period of time. Doctor told me that every morning, one night, because I said, oh, God, help me. There's no blinding flash of light. Nobody come running down the hall with a dozen donuts saying, "We got an A meeting down there." I just went to sleep for a little while. I don't know how many of you ever kicked a 2-year heroin habit, but that's what I was doing at that time. A couple of weeks later, I'd run around and you're looking for some more of the poison and put me back in the bed I'd just gotten off of. I don't understand it. I understand it. But I do know something. In the back of my little head tonight, just like it was then, is the knowledge that when I can't stand life on life terms, I know what makes the big hurt go away. And being an alcoholic, if you put me in the wrong place at the wrong time in the wrong set of circumstances, no matter how many people I sponsor, no matter how many book studies I go to, no matter how many meetings I go to, no matter how long I've been sober, if I get in that dilemma, I'm going to be drunk. I hear statements in Alcoholics Anonymous that make no sense to me whatsoever. People say things like, "Alcohol just quit working in my life." You know what my reaction to that is? What the hell are you going to AA meetings for then? If alcohol don't work, what are you doing here? And if you don't think alcohol works, go find somebody who can't stay sober here and ask them that. Ask them, did it work? They may tell you, yeah, it did what I wanted it to do. It gave me that moment of, whew. See, and that's what an alcoholic of my type looks for after being sober for a period of time. I'm looking for that relief, that taking it easy. That's what I want. That's what alcohol does for me. And the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, when practiced as a way of life, brings about that same sense of comfort and ease that I got from taking a few drinks. The doctor talks about it in the doctor's opinion. That men and women like me drink essentially because I like the effect produced by alcohol. And even though I know that it's injurious, after a while I cannot differentiate the true from the false. And unless I can experience the comfort and ease that comes with taking a few drinks, drinks that I see other people taking with impunity, and I have come to desire at once, and then the phenomenon of craving takes over and I got to drink it to the end. My drinking always ended in a set of handcuffs or a straitjacket, and it wouldn't be any different today, a half a century later, than it was then, maybe even worse. Who knows? They say it's a progressive illness even during long and total periods of abstinence. And I've been active and participating in enough Alcoholics Anonymous meetings to watch that be true. People drink after periods of sobriety and it's never any better. But I don't know all that's said in these meetings. I am new in this Alcoholics Anonymous meeting and you proved to me I was an alcoholic. I sit in here wanting to be an alcoholic. You'd get up at podiums like this and say things like, "I used to drink, now I don't drink anymore, and everything is just wonderful." Now back there in the inventory point where I'm sitting, I'm saying to myself, I'm not alcoholic then. God, I wish I was. You see, I'm not drinking either, just like that guy is, and I'm crazy. I want to go tear his throat out. But I'm not alcoholic. I wanted to be an alcoholic so bad, but I didn't know what an alcoholic was. So how could I know what to be? See, these people are talking about a problem with alcohol, and I'm suffering from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body called alcoholism. And I didn't understand that. I didn't understand the difference between a problem with alcohol and this seemingly hopeless state of mind and body called alcoholism. That the solution to alcoholism is drinking. The solution to alcohol problems is not drinking. Bill writes about it in his book. The difference between me and a normal to heavy drinker. Moderate to heavy drinkers, he said, can quit giving any type of reasonable excuse, like getting locked up in a treatment center, getting a traffic ticket, girlfriend leaving you, wife leaving you, job, all kinds of things. Quit drinking, never drink again. No necessity for any type of spiritual awakening. None whatsoever. Just don't drink. But then he talked about the real alcoholic in this book. That I may get sober during any particular period of time, but sooner or later I must always have to drink again. Always. Because I had this illness. I don't know this. So what changed? A man wandered into this penitentiary one day. A man that I knew had did 23 flat years in the penitentiary. He was my baseball coach when I was a star second baseman for the San Quentin Pirates for a couple of years. I put that on a resume one time. You ought to saw that guy. He said, San Quentin? And I said, yes. He said, where's that? I said, something near Stanford. He said, that must be a good school. I said, I learned a lot of things here. I didn't get the job. I just had to do it because my sponsor said so. This man stood up at a podium of Alcoholics Anonymous and told me something and said something from a podium that all the therapists and all the psychiatrists, all the sociologists and the wardens, the lawyers and the teachers and the preachers and the coaches didn't seem to know. He stood at a point of Alcoholics Anonymous and said, you don't have to live like this no more if you don't want to. Very simple statement, huh? You don't have to do it like this no more. Nobody had ever said that to me. You know what they said to me? If you didn't drink these things and swallow these things and smoke these things and shoot these things, you wouldn't have any problems. But you see what none of them ever considered, never take into consideration? Every time they told me that, I was as physically sober as I am right now. So what did I do in my mind? I said, you don't understand. They don't. See, if you're not alcoholic, you'll never understand why I drink. But if you're not, I'll never understand why you don't. God, you listen to them. They're pathetic, for God's sake. Oh, no thanks. I'm starting to feel it. My older brother, not alcoholic under any wild stretch of imagination, so that brings that heredity theory into the toilet. Twice that. Yeah, I was drinking with him the last time I ever decided to go drink with my brother, which was a funeral. You know what he said to me? It was a Friday night. You know what he said to me? To drink. You know what he said? I got to go home. I just got paid. What? He said, I'm going home. I just got paid, Johnny. I got a couple kids. I said, oh. He said, what are you going to do? I said, I'm going to Mexico. All right, clear blue sign. Mexico seemed like a good place. There I said in this meeting, I went up to this guy after the meeting and I said to him, how do you learn how to live? I wasn't interested in being sober from that day to this day or living this good life that I've discovered here. Not at all. I wouldn't know how to sleep all night. That's all I wanted. I just wanted how to lay down and sleep all night without some type of heavy, powerful drugs in my system. That's what I wanted. I didn't know that, but I couldn't stand the nightmares anymore. And he said something very simple to me. It's almost lost. That's why I'm very pleased to hear him read out the book Alcoholics Anonymous. I have this book on this podium. He said, Johnny, there's a book called Alcoholics Anonymous in the library. If you go get that book, I'll go home and pray that you find some part of you in it. So I went over to the prison library the next day and stole the book Alcoholics Anonymous. Well, you got to remember, I got a big time gangster image. I got a bunch of partners looking around at me, watching me do all this kind of stuff. And I want my name signed alongside of anything as lame as Alcoholics Anonymous anyhow. And so I took the book into my cell, and when nobody was around, I started to read it. Now, I didn't read the book Alcoholics Anonymous to discover this fantastic way of life. Not at all. See, I was reading the book with the loser's theme song in my head. I'm going to read your book. Then I'm going to come tell you if my case is different, it won't work for me. The loser's theme song in Alcoholics Anonymous. You don't understand. My case is different. I'm an alcoholic and something. Yeah. You're an alcoholic and idiot. You just consciously separated yourself from Alcoholics Anonymous with your little anda. Guys, I start to start talking that stuff to me. I start speaking Mexican to them. Adios. You know, if you're in here, you think your case is different, I can tell you, hasta la vista, baby. You ain't going to be here much longer either. Now, I don't make the rules. And I don't, that's not a judgment call. That's the experience of sitting in these meetings four or five times a week for over 50 years and watching what goes on around me. You cannot stay different here and stay here. You can't do that. Because sooner or later, the chairs get hard. Sooner or later, everybody's a dialogue. Sooner or later, it's the same people doing everything in AA. Sooner or later, everything's better to do. There's more to do. There's better getting normal. I want blah, 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 blah. But if your life is on the line every day, you got to know that. See, if you're an alcoholic of my type, I'm either going to die, go insane, or I'm going to get sober and stay that way. There's no other dilemma. There's no other way out of this dilemma. I'm sorry. I wish there was. But you see, if you're a drinker and not an alcoholic, there's a lot of difference between the two. Because the drink problem, when taken away from you, is the solution to your problem. But if you take that away from me, you take this answer of mine away from me, you better have something to fill that void. And the book says, and I write this book, so I want to keep repeating it to you. The book says, back in here, and there's a solution somewhere. It says, do you have a solution? The answer to that is, yes, we do. We have a solution for your dilemma if you're an alcoholic. We don't have a solution for your problem if you're not alcoholic. We don't have that solution for you because it requires some type of effort. What got me was the doctor's opinion. The greatest description of this illness that I have that's ever been put to man. It's a great description of what's wrong with me and what it takes to overcome it. It says, unless I have a complete psychic change, there's very little hope for my recovery. A psychic change is a doctor's way of saying a spiritual awakening. A psychic change, rearrangements of ideas and operations and actions. So what happened? I read this doctor's opinion and a word called the phenomenon of craving. I got this phenomenon of craving thing in here. And I started to think about my life and the opportunities I've been given in life. I thought about being offered a scholarship to play baseball at a major university in Los Angeles while I was in a reform school in the Valley. I thought about the contract that I was offered to play baseball for the St. Louis Cardinals when I was at San Quentin State Penitentiary. I never got to UCLA to play ball, and I loved playing ball. And I never got to St. Louis to play ball for the Cardinals. And I thought, that was because of where I came from. I thought it had to do with that family that I was born into. I thought it had to do with those gangs I joined in juvenile hall. I thought it had to do with all the dilemma. I thought it had to do with the stool pigeon. I thought it had to do with this. It was everything. I was a victim before it became popular. I just was not my fault. That's why I never went anywhere. Not my fault. God, with that kind of resentment and things inside me, no wonder I was sick and kept getting sicker. And you know what happened to me that day? Something happened to me that day that I've done every day since then for over 50-some years. Over 52 years now. I assumed the responsibility for my own actions that day. The reason I didn't go to UCLA, the reason I didn't play Major League Baseball, it's not had anything to do with my background, it's because I just took a drink. And then the drink took a drink. And then the drink took me. That's my dilemma. I'm the guy drank it. I'm the guy that joined the gang. I'm the guy that committed the atrocities. I'm the guy that tore my mother's heart out. I'm the guy that destroyed my mother's soul with my actions. I'm the guy that did it. Alcohol's not responsible for that. Alcohol made it bearable for me to live with that. I'm the guy that committed the actions. I don't want to hear this crap about alcohol. I did it because I don't want to hear that crap either. You're the one that did it. And if you don't fess up to it and assume the responsibility for your own action, you may die drunk if you're an alcoholic. Or you may walk around on this tightrope of self-centered justification for the rest of your life. I walked out of a man's office right after that. Spent 3.5 hours with him doing what this book says. Searching and a fearless and a moral inventory. I told that man things that day sitting in his office that would have kept me in the penitentiary for the rest of my natural life. And the reason I told him that is because the book said I should tell him that. Not because somebody told me that I should tell him or just take it easy. Don't hold back a little. You don't have to tell. The book says I'm trying to build an ark to walk a free man. That's what the book says. The book says, that's why it says, searching and a fearless and a moral inventory. Holding back nothing, it says. Because I'm trying to build an ark to walk a free man. And freedom ain't got a damn thing to do about where you're at. Freedom's right in here. There's people sitting in this room in deeper prison than I've ever been in my life. You're more locked up in yourself than I was ever in that cell in solitary confinement. And the book says, the selfishness and self-centeredness is the root of my problems. And if I don't get rid of it, it's going to kill me. And so I spent 1.5 years in that penitentiary trying to incorporate the first 9 steps of our program of recovery into my life. And you know, with the book here, there's a set of actions you take will bring about a change of attitudes and a change of thing. You don't need anybody to guide you through it. You just do what the book says. An old man who was the only father I've ever known said, talked a great deal about surrender. He said, if you're not surrendered when you come to Alcoholics Anonymous, if you work the first 9 steps of our program of recovery to the best of your ability, they're designed to surrender you. And I guess they did that to me because somewhere during that period of time there was a dream that appeared in my head that maybe someday you'd let me come and sit with you. I never dreamed you'd ever ask me to do anything here. I didn't think you'd, I thought maybe you'd have me sit outside and look through a window or something. I didn't think you'd let good people would let me come and sit with you. But I said to myself, give me the privilege of coming and sitting in the meetings, I'll do anything you ask me to do. I'm very pleased to be able to tell you tonight for over 51 years, I've done just about everything that Alcoholics Anonymous has asked me to do. Oh, not always willingly. Well, you got to watch these people who just can't wait to get to their next meeting. Something wrong with them, too, I guess. It's always better when I'm here, but that doesn't mean I always want to get here. It's always better when I get here. When I leave here. So I went home that day. I walked out of the penitentiary on the 4th day of June, 1961. I knew nothing about living life on life terms out here. I'd never had a job. I didn't have a Social Security card. I didn't have a driver's license. I didn't have anything. I went home to see my mother that day. And the only reason she let me in the house because she's drunk. If my mother had been sober, I'd have been homeless for my day out of the penitentiary. But I went to this meeting and my mother said to me, I told her, I'm going to an AA meeting, Mom. And she said, fine, I think you should. And I had the painful experience of watching my mother drink herself to death here. So don't talk to me about this illness. There's some little socialist situation like going to get a doctor and get a shot of penicillin at a meeting. This thing kills people. I watched my mother drink herself to death. I watched her come to these meetings. She never got into AA. She just came to the meeting. She stayed here as long as she could stand it, and then she left. And she stayed out there as long as she could stand it, and she left. And it was the most damning thing ever. You know the greatest lesson I've ever learned from my mother? I learned I don't have the power to get anybody sober. I don't have any power to get them drunk either. I don't have any power to keep me sober, for Christ's sake. Where would I get it? I didn't come here with any power. The power that I receive comes from this God I discovered sitting in meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous. So I know where to go when the rubber hits the road. And I don't know what's going on. I went to this meeting, a guy by the name of Norm Alpe came up to me and told me he was going to be my sponsor. You know, I had a dilemma when I was new and didn't know it. I didn't think that I was worthy enough to ask anybody to help me. I thought, I just can't ask for your time to help me. But I didn't care. All I wanted to do was come and sit in your meeting. So he told me he was going to be my sponsor. I said to him, what's that? He said, well, I'm going to help you get things done that need to be done, Johnny. And I said, okay, what do you want me to do? He said, why do you ask me? I said, Norm, you just told me you were going to be my sponsor. He said, Johnny, if I can't run your life, what makes you think I can run yours? And I said, then what have I got to do? And he said, why don't you just do what I do? And I said to him, what is it you do anyhow? And he said, he gave me this great answer to sponsorship. Well, if you do what I do, then you'll know what I do. I just broke up the great mystery of sponsorship to you. It's called monkey see, monkey do. You gotta be careful. A lot of people run around here in monkey suits, ain't monkeys. They tell you things that ain't in this book. And if it ain't in this book, it ain't right. There's a lot of nonsense that goes on. No, don't drink. No matter what. Do you know that alcoholics drink no matter what? Then they talk about stuff like, don't drink if your ass falls off. Do you know that alcoholics don't like that kind of pain? It ain't in the butt anyhow. The pain they're talking about for the alcoholics in here. And that comes about from bad actions. Comes back from this being different. My case is different. I don't have to do that, so I won't take these actions. These actions are foolproof. My sponsor, you know the first thing my sponsor told me to do? He said, why don't you get a job and go to work? You're a bum. I told him, I'm not a bum. He said, what are you if I'm an AA member? He said, then you're an AA bum. Bums don't work. He said, why don't you get off of welfare? I almost hit him. I ain't never been on welfare, Norm Alpe. If you ever say that to me again, I'm going to hit you. He said to me, what do you call living in penitentiary, Johnny? Self-supporting through your own contribution? Get an answer for everything. See, what he was bringing home is what kind of a taker I was. I was expecting something for doing nothing. And that's the stupidest thing that happens in Alcoholics Anonymous. People think there's great rewards coming just because they don't drink anymore. I'm going to these meetings. I'm not doing anything. So they just come and occupy space or leave. Suck the life out of the meeting from time to time. Every once in a while they just change. Their faces change, but the actions never change. They never change. But in the dilemma, the alcoholic who watches that dies because it doesn't look like it's as attractive as getting there and setting up the meeting and making coffee and sweeping the floors and cleaning it up afterwards. It's a little more glamorous to show up in your little gang uniform and hit on some new chicken. Like, I tell you, one of the sickest things I've ever seen is people in sober living houses hitting on people in sober living houses. I say to them, what do you say? We go to your sober living house or mine tonight? What the hell you got to offer anybody? I spend a lot of time around people like that. It's just stupid stuff I watch them do. You know, and it's, you know, it's just the guys, the gals get into it pretty good, too. Come on. Come on. He wouldn't let me go ride. He wouldn't let me buy a car. I didn't have a driver's license. I said to him, my driver's license has been suspended in 1948 for the rest of my natural life. He said, good, then you won't drive a car for the rest of your natural life. I said, how am I going to get to meeting? He said, just get to meeting. He said, call me. I'm coming by your house, I'll pick you up. So I called him a couple times. Norm, I know you're going to go by here tonight. Would you pick me up, take me to a meeting? I almost sniveled. God, it was terrible. Just eating up your ego. God, the image is not good. When I begged him for about 10 minutes on the phone to come and pick me up. His answer was always the same. Stand on the street corner, I'll pick you up. You better be there when I get there because they ain't waiting. He drove up, had his window rolled down. I said, where are we going? He looked at me and said, we ain't going nowhere. And he drove off. Let me stand on the street corner. I said, Norm. When I called him on the phone at midnight, see how sincere he was. Norm, you let me stand on the street corner. He said, Johnny, you called me up and you begged me to take you to a meeting. You sniveled on the phone and asked me to come pick you up, take you to a meeting, didn't you? And I said, yes, I did, Norm. He said, then why did you stick your head in the window of my car and ask me where we were going? What did you think, I was going to take you to a dance or something, for Christ's sake? What's wrong with you? I tell you, that was my sponsor for 22 years before he dropped dead. He's still alive, he'd still be my sponsor. But for the next 22 years, I never one time ever said to him when I got in the car, where are we going? I just said, hi, Norm. He let me stand on the street corner because he didn't think I was dressed properly to go to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. I was hot a couple times. I was in my shorts and my tank top and my thongs. You know, slick my hair, slick back and my shades on, standing on the street corner with the Pachuco stance, for Christ's sake. He drove up, took one look at me, and drove off. When I asked him why, I always had to question. He said, well, would you go to church dressed like that? And I said, no. He said, well, you ain't going to my church dressed like that either. He said, Johnny, you got to give the newcomers something to shoot for. They just left a bunch of jackasses that look like you and dress like you and act like you. And we're sitting here telling them we've got something different for you here. Yet they walk in and there's a bunch of clowns standing around, still dressed the same, wearing their little hippie-app uniform. They're still nothing has changed. Except they're sitting in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. It's what they just left. God, that makes a lot of sense to me today. Then I thought he was just picking on me. But I've come to understand it. I remember one night I was going to a meeting. At the coffee break, I wandered back and stood by the literature table. And a guy tapped me on the shoulder, and I turned around, and some guy standing there, and he looked at me and he said, Johnny, and I said, yes. He said, I heard you talk the other day. And I said, yes. You know how humble we are. He said, man, do you know you're a miracle? I said, really? He said, yes. Oh, I just kind of wandered back into my seat, fell down there, and looked out the window to see when my spaceship was coming back. And on the way home, I'm riding with old Norm because I still ain't driving a car. And he said, what's the matter with you, jackass? You smoking stuff again? I said, Norm, I don't think you're going to understand this, but I'm a miracle. That was not Norm's reaction. He said, you're what? He damn near ran into the divider on the freeway. He said, where do you get this nonsense? I said, Norm, in an AA meeting. He said, you're not a miracle, jackass. He said, Alcoholics Anonymous is a miracle, and you're just a small part of it. Now, I don't know what that does for all the miracles in Laguna Niguel tonight. But I can tell you what it's done for me. It's kept me small enough to stay here. You can't possibly imagine what an egotist like me would do if I thought I was a miracle. Man, I'd probably be getting some Greyhound buses out here to take us all to Waco to do it right tonight or something. I have that type of an ego. I know that. That's why I go to a lot of meetings. That's why I try to practice these principles in all my affairs. That's why I do things in alcoholics. That's why I willingly sponsor people. Why I willingly try to take them through the steps. Why I willingly try to keep them in this book. My home group is the Big Book Group. It's the name of it. Because it comes from this book. It starts in this book. Anybody who will put these things to work in their life, it'll happen to you. I'll tell you one of the great benefits this thing has ever done to me. It's peeled my images from me. And when I walk into Folsom State Penitentiary every year to speak at a banquet, 4,000 or 5,000 convicts up there, hard shell convicts. I'm not talking about these little mealy-mouthed people who are doing 90 days or hiding out in a sober living house. I'm talking about people who are never going to get out of the penitentiary, most of them. Most of them sitting around there doing 20, 30 years. They got it behind them, and they're much older than some of you. And I'm sitting there talking to these guys every year. I'm not walking in there dragging my legs, trying to be down, get down with them. I'm walking around and telling what Alcoholics Anonymous can do for them. And you know who meets me at the front door? The warden of Folsom State Penitentiary. He puts his arms around and hugs me and takes me in there. Takes me by my old cell, by my old shower, by my own mess hall, by my own baseball diamond, by everything. He walks me through the yard. A bunch of my homies are out there playing handball. They come breaking through. They're, "Homie," they say. Now, I ain't dressed with a bandana with my hat on backwards and dragging my ass down the road. I'm dressed like this, only better. Everything I own is good I wear. And I keep going up there. A couple, 3 years ago, I walked out of there so depressed I was crying almost. And the warden said to me, "Why? What's the matter, Johnny? You feel depressed?" And I said, "I really am." He said, "Why is that?" And I said, "I just spoke to 300 or 400 or 500 convicts who may never get out of this penitentiary. And the ones who will get out of this penitentiary will never darken the doorway of Alcoholics Anonymous. That makes me sad." He said, "Why you come, for God's sake?" He said, "You buy your own ticket. You pay for your own hotel room. It's your expense. You do this every year, and you don't even eat the meal." And I said, "Well, maybe, Warden, maybe one of these days there's going to be a Johnny Harris sitting on the back row of one of these meetings. I'm sure in 1959 when those people got in their car and drove up the 100 miles they did, they said, 'We're going to go up there and find Johnny Harris and he's going to be sober forever.' I'm sure of that. They just did what we're supposed to do here, what this book says we're supposed to do, what this young man talked about. We're supposed to carry the message to the alcoholics who still suffer, not only in words, but in deeds. Not only the way we talk about how we talk, but how we dress, how we appear. What kind of an attraction would we be to somebody who comes here and wants to stay sober? We ought to look like we could take the time to go home and clean up before we come to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. We should look like we just left a volleyball game to fall in here because we had nothing better to do that night. We should look like there's something here that would attract a newcomer. That's what it should be in Alcoholics Anonymous. The attraction starts from within and goes all the way out. It's not just what you put on. It's got to shine. It's got to be something. It's got to have, the book says, the message that holds these people has to have wet and date. It has to happen. It's got to be something. How can you get from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body to where you're standing out there on the sunny side of the street? That's what my sponsors talk about. My sponsor died after 22 years. I just took a case the other night for 51 years out of the penitentiary, and my sponsor gave it to me last night. It's been my sponsor for 29 years. See, I'm 50-some years sober. I still need a sponsor. I call my sponsor every day. I sit with him in a meeting. I listened to what he had to say. I ain't got a lot of things to say to him. The guy said, "Why do you call him every day?" I said, "Well, I'm asking you, my sponsor. He told me to call him every day." He said, "You still call him every day?" And I said, "Yeah." And he said, "Why?" He said, "He hasn't told me not to yet." See, I can't run my own life, and I know it, but I don't want to. I had 25 or 26 years running my own life. Running my own life. Doing whatever I wanted to do, whenever I wanted to do it. Damn everybody that got in my road. Get out of my road. And I've had 50 some odd years trying to live your way of life. And I still think it's the best thing that's ever happened to me. Really, I really do. I mean, I was sitting there talking to people. I've been all over the world since I've been sober. All over the world. And I never wanted to do anything but come and sit in your meetings. I don't even know what I'm supposed to do from this day forward. I just do whatever it is I'm asked to do. Angela asked me at the Crown Valley Speakers a few months ago if I'd come here, and I said, sure. Sure would. So here I am. If you're new in Alcoholics Anonymous tonight, and there are a few of you, some have stood up and some who didn't. If you're new here in Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, I'm by no wild stretch of the imagination a consultant or a counselor on a program of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm an example of good, bad, and different. That hasn't been necessary for me to drink anything, swallow anything, smoke anything, or stick anything in my arms. And sometime before the fourth day of November, 1959. And the only place that I've been in that day, from that day to this day, is meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous. The only therapy I've ever had introduced in my life is what's in the book Alcoholics Anonymous that this young man talked about. So if you're new, I hope you come along and join us on this happy road of destiny. Because I'm telling you, you're in for a hell of a ride. If I could give you what I found here in Alcoholics Anonymous, I don't think I would. See, I wouldn't deprive you of the journey. I wouldn't deprive you of the idea to turn around someday and find out that you're sober and you're happy about it. What a great thing for an alcoholic. I would never deprive you of the journey of turning around and watch somebody that's asked you to help them walk up and get a birthday chip for 6 months or 9 months or a year, whatever it may be, and watch that transformation that happened to people in Alcoholics Anonymous. That's the miraculous thing of Alcoholics Anonymous. That's the payoff here. The payoff is not me being sober, not being having a happy home or a little job or a host of friends or traveling or whatever I may do. That's not the payoff. It's to sit in a meeting and watch somebody start out of the sink with nothing, go up and get a 24-hour day chip and watch them 30 days, 60 days, 90 days, 9 months, and watch them stand up there beaming and happy with their family sitting in a room while they take their one-year birthday cake. That's the payoff in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I hope, like me, that you can stay here long enough to see that and realize that that's the power of a loving God working through His people. Thank you very much.